Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I'm Senator Mia Costello. I'd like to welcome Senator Gardner.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Senator Meyer, welcome.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki, welcome.
Thank you.
And Senator Stevens, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Today is March 22nd, 2018, and we are continuing the sectional for the Title IV rewrite introduced by Senator Machicki. And Rachel, you're welcome to come sit at the table while we go through it. We have Anna Browley online, who's in the Anchorage LIO, and I wanted to thank members for your patience. We had the Joint Armed Services Committee met today from 11:30 till 1:30, and so I appreciate your patience in that matter. So with that, Anna, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, if you want to continue working through the sectional, is my understanding, and then that will be followed by the PowerPoint. And since you're in Anchorage, Anna, if last time when you were in Anchorage, it would probably be helpful if the pace was a little bit slow, because it gives me time to look and see if there are questions from members without having to interrupt you. So if you pause every so often, I'll use that as an opportunity to call on members who might have questions.
Yes, I will.
We'll take a brief at ease. Committee is back in order. Anna, I think you just had a few sections to go through to finish the sectional, and so we'll go ahead and do that, and then we'll come back into the room for the PowerPoint.
Yes, thank you. The sectional, which is
Anna
20.
Can't hear.
Okay, Anna, we're not able to hear you.
Sorry, we're looking at page 20. The repealers and transitions, please.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Section 149 amends Court Rule 117 by adding a statutory reference. Section 150 repeals the section referenced with the effective date of January 1st, 2020. Section 151 includes the remediate sections that are included for immediate repeal. Section 152 repeals additional sections with an effective date of January 1st, 2028. And Section 153 includes several sections for repeal effective January 1st, 2020. Section 154 is uncodified law. It states that offenses committed on or after the effective date are applicable for the new penalty. Section 155 is a transition that covers conversion of existing licenses and applications for licenses and allows the board to do that within the effective date of 2020. Section 156 creates a seasonal restaurant or eating place license as a transitional section, allows for conversion of existing restaurant eating place licenses and applications, and then that would become a regular license type under the new effective date. Section 157 transition directs the board to create regulations to adopt this bill. Section 158 includes an immediate effective date clause for portions of the bill, and Section 159 includes a January 1st, 2020 effective date for the rest of the bill.
Thank you, Anna. I actually have a question about the transition on Section 156 and how that is affected by the population requirements, or if it's at all affected or falls under that provision.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of including this in transition is this is a new license type, so some existing restaurant licenses may wish to take advantage of this license instead. It is not a license under the population limits defined by permanent residents, but it does include a formula for determining a number of licenses available per community.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there questions from committee members? Okay. Seeing none, we will then go into the room and welcome Rachel. You'll be walking us through the PowerPoint, is my understanding.
days, Mr. Chair?
Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and we will now go through the PowerPoint. Rachel's here in Juneau, and then Anna, if you could walk us through that, please.
Yes, thank you. And I will direct Rachel to go to the next slide. Thank you. So this presentation is an overview of the sections that we covered on Tuesday, which is chapters 9 and 11, and the transition section that we just covered today. And other sections in the bill have been covered in prior hearings. Next.
Senator Gardner.
Are you able to expand a little bit on the note that's on page 3? Says local option recommendations are documented but not included, and a more comprehensive review and discussion of local option laws is needed in the future. Is this something where agreement wasn't reached amongst the stakeholders, or are there particular issues that just were very thorny?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Gardner. It's not so much that there was a lack of agreement. Local option was one of the topic areas that the Title IV review project took on, and the scope of that committee's work really focused on law enforcement and technical issues in the statute that affected local option. But through the course of our discussions, we identified other larger issues that people would like to review further, the number of local options, the penalties associated with local options, a variety of larger issues, and there was just not good enough representation in that group to be able to tackle that, including from rural communities that have local options. And so it's not a lack of agreement, it's just wanting to take more time and care to really dive into those issues further. And that is a goal of this group in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anna, if you could continue with the PowerPoint.
Yes, thank you. So going to the next slide, there's some major concepts in Title IV that we just wanted to make sure to highlight. One is the three-tier system. It's traditionally the way that manufacturers, wholesalers, and retailers of alcohol have been separated in terms of their business interests to prevent monopolies.
Anna, if you could slow down and also get closer to the microphone and also, if possible, mention the page number that you're on, please, so we can follow more easily.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm on slide 4.
Anna, if you could continue.
Thank you. So there's some big concepts in Title IV that impact individual sections in the bill and individual sections in law. First is the three-tier system. The second is population limits, which defines the number of license types available in each community based on their full year population. License transfers, which means selling the ownership or moving the location of a license from one place to another within the same community, and a new concept proposed, which is endorsements, which would be add-ons to licenses that allow them to expand their physical presence or allowed activities on their license. Next slide. So the three-tier system, as I mentioned, is something that was established after Prohibition and has really governed alcohol control, not just in Alaska, but in the U.S. overall. And, of course, it has been changing over the years. As we know, manufacturers do offer sales to the public and retail operations, but a lot of the main tenets of Title IV are related to the three-tier system. Next slide. The population limits, again, are an important concept to understand in Title IV. It is what is known as a limited entry system for most licenses, meaning there's a certain number available in each community, and they are determined by the full year resident population. So most licenses, it's one per 3,000 people, and most in restaurants, it's one per 1,500 people.
Anna,
there are some licenses.
We heard in testimony at the last meeting that there was one in 9,000 for, I think it's breweries. Could you explain that provision?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The proposed population limit would be for manufacturer retail licenses, the brewery retail, winery retail, and distillery retail. And these would be a higher population limit because each of those product types operating in the same community could result in a great number of alcohol outlets. And so the proposal is to further limit those, recognizing that we are creating new license types and the population limits are defined by license type.
Thank you, Anna.
On the next slide, again, covering population limits, these do apply per license type. So this slide is just to illustrate kind of the unintended consequences of creating or having a lot of license types, because even though there is the population limit for each type, overall it can result in a very high density of overall alcohol outlets demonstrated on the slide.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So looking at this, this is the first time I've really realized that what this bill does is greatly reduce the potential number of licenses in communities. Is that correct? That the density will be less.
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Gardner. Yes, the goal was to kind of manage the number of license types and illustrate the unintended consequences of creating new license types. The goal is not necessarily to reduce the number of existing licenses because we recognize that those are operating businesses, and so it's really looking ahead to the future.
Thank you.
Senator Gardner, so this is the current title for, it's my understanding. Mm-hmm. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Anna, if you can clarify again, current, we've got some confusion in several different areas. If you can clarify current regulation with changes as you go through. I know there's confusion that the manufacturer sample or tasting rooms, that we've increased the amount that's allowable, that didn't change in the bill. Make sure people understand the differences as you go through it, please, between current and new proposals.
Yes, to the chair, Senator Mitchell, I will do that. So on the next slide, again, with population limits, this is demonstrating current law in Title IV, and this general mechanism is not proposed for change. It simply demonstrates that licenses are defined by community. So for places with cities within a borough, there are a separate number of license types available in a city versus a borough. And there are some license types that can be issued outside population limits. Generally, those serve tourists. Next slide. So the proposed one of the proposed changes in SB 76 is to apply population limits to retail licenses only, meaning licenses that serve the public, serve alcohol to the public, and excluding tourism-focused licenses and winery direct shipment license. And the purpose of this is because the public health implications of the number of alcohol outlets really focus on service to the public rather than other business activities like wholesaling. Next slide. Another concept to understand in current Title IV is transfer of ownership or location. And a license can be transferred by owner, meaning that part or all of the business's ownership is sold to another person or given to another person, or it can be transferred by location. So that could be the same business that's moving to a different building, or it could be the sale of a license to a totally different business, which would be a transfer of ownership and location. Next slide. And so the proposed change in the bill is to allow all licenses to be transferable to a new owner, meaning that if they have any existing restrictions on transfer of location, those would still apply. But this is in part to help family-owned businesses or businesses that want to do an internal transfer of ownership to not have to go through the process of applying for a new license. Because there are some license types that are not transferable by owner or location currently. Next slide. Another important concept in current Title IV is the license application process. So again, the licenses are good for 2 years, and AMCO does send renewal notices out to existing licenses, and anyone who would like to apply for a new license or a transfer of a license can do that at any time. And part of the process includes sending the application to the local governing body in that area, as well as allowing any individual to object to a license. And so there is a process during the license application process for community and government review, local government review of that application. And that's the point at which they can weigh in and make recommendations to the board. And the board is still ultimately the entity that approves or denies a license application.
Thank you, Anna. And I have a question for Erica McConnell, who's the director of the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office, about this change in the bill. Erica, can you hear me?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can hear you.
Thank you. So in my district that I represent, it seems like the transfer of licenses is a time-consuming process, and I'm wondering if the change in this bill will help move that process along so that businesses don't have an interruption like they have in my district.
For the record, this is Erica McConnell, Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. Madam Chair, the bill, to my recollection, does not make any significant changes to the process of transferring a license. It does take some time, but it is not our intent to interrupt service, but there are certain steps that need to be taken in a certain order. If a business owner, like say it's a restaurant, say they, if they sell their restaurant to another owner and that new owner takes over the business, takes over the lease, then before the license is actually transferred by the board, then the person who is actually licensed to sell alcohol has given up control over the premises, and that is a problem, but there is a way to manage that problem through what we call a management agreement, which is addressed in regulation, which can be used to kind of cover the gap should the business change hands before the license is actually transferred.
Okay, thank you for that. Are there other questions from committee members since Erica's online? Senator Gardner?
So how long might the transferring license process take on average?
We tell people to plan for 3 to 6 months. There is 3 weeks of advertising that is required, and then there's, an uncertainty based on exactly when they approve their application or when they submit their application related to when the next board meeting is. The board meets usually about 5 times a year. So if they submit their application right after the board has just met, there could be a longer wait than if they submit closer to when the next board is meeting. But we do recommend that people plan for 3 to 6 months.
Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. It's, as a representative of the constituents in my district, there's a lot of frustration when there's the ability to go to a restaurant with the expectation that there might be beer or wine in a location that's been established for perhaps decades, and then learn that for whatever reason that's not something that can happen. And we've pursued trying to find the answers to these types of questions, and I'm just wondering if there's some way to address that issue. I'd be open to a conversation, because I think the public, it seems to me that there's no change in the behavior of the public, that the restaurant exists, it had a license before, and to have that on hold for such a long period of time, I could see how it would affect the bottom line. So those are just my comments on that. And we'll actually go back to Anna now to continue, I think, slide 13 or 12.
Yes, thank you. And we can actually move on to slide 13. So SB 76 recommends making several changes, language changes in the statute to make the application process a little smoother, and also one change that allows the board to send electronic renewal applications. Next slide. Another concept that we touched on in Tuesday's hearing was endorsements, and again, those are add-ons to licenses. They would not be operated on their own, but they give businesses more flexibility in terms of physical premises and or activities allowed on the license. Next slide. And again, that the slide 15 covers what I just said, that they would be renewable with the license. They are not population limited. And many existing license activities are proposed to become endorsements in SB 76. Next slide. This slide basically gives the overview of the reorganization of the license types, endorsements, and permits in Title IV as Chapter 9. And you can see on the slide there are references to which specific sections are organized in this way. Next slide. The following three slides illustrate a graphic that is also available in the report as a one-page graphic. It illustrates the three-tier system, which existing license types fit into that system, which endorsements would apply to each license type, and whether these licenses are subject to population limits or exempt. So the first slide shows manufacturing wholesale tier, and the next slide shows retail tier licenses, and I will point your attention to licenses that have a bold outline. Those are ones that are proposed to be new in statute, but again, I will say that the retail licenses shown for manufacturers are existing activities that would become a retail license. Next slide. The third slide illustrates retail licenses that are, as I said, exempt from population limits but serve primarily tourists. And then the last part of that graphic illustrates the three license types that would be taken out of statute and would be replaced by existing license types. Next slide. This is the first of a few recommendations for manufacturing licenses. It is recommending keeping the brewery, winery, and distillery licenses in statute, removing bottling works and brew pub licenses, and again, converting existing licensees to one of the three manufacturer types. Next slide. This slide shows current Title IV and illustrates the differences between a brewery license and a brew pub license. They just certainly look similar to the general public, but the brewery license has no limit on the amount they can produce per year. It does allow them to self-distribute, but it limits their retail activities. And you can see on the slide, they can be open till 8. They can have no bar seating or live entertainment, and they have limits on what they can sell. The brewpub license, in contrast, is one that's exercised with a retail license, either a bar license or a restaurant license. But it does have a limit on production. It allows manufacturing up to 15,000 barrels per year, and it also limits how much that can be sold at wholesale. And it also allows the licensee to sell for off-site consumption, meaning that they could fill a growler or sell bottles, which is typically not allowed at a bar or a restaurant. Next slide. This slide simply illustrates slide 22, what would happen to current brew pubs, and demonstrating that they would be fitting into the new system, and because they would have a brewery license, they would not have a production limit anymore. Next slide. The next recommendation is to allow small manufacturers to hold retail licenses. Again, with the exception of brew pubs and the retail activities in their licenses now, manufacturers cannot apply for other retail licenses, such as package stores. That is part of the three-tier system. We are proposing eliminating that restriction for manufacturers that produce under a certain amount, which is defined in the bill. and anybody above that amount would not be able to obtain a retail license in Alaska. They would be limited to production and therefore would need to sell to a wholesaler. Next slide. And again, this is illustrating what options there would be for a manufacturer. Breweries use as an example, but this would apply for all three product types. They would either be able to get the retail license, which is often known as a tasting room license, similar to what they do now, or they would be able to get another retail license, such as a bar, a restaurant, a package store, any other retail tier license. Next slide.
Anna, the acronym REPL, could you let us know what that stands for?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. That's restaurant or eating place.
Thank you.
Yes, and that license type is only allowed to sell beer and wine, not spirits. So on slide 25, the next recommendation for manufacturers, again, is to take existing retail activities and make them into a retail license specific for each product type. It would have the same restrictions on hours of sale and ounces per day. It would convert existing licensees. This new retail license beyond existing licenses that would be automatically converted would be subject to that 1 to 9,000 population limit, again, because we are recognizing that we're creating three new license types with the implications for the population limit. And then after 8 years, these new licensees would be limited to selling only 20% of their sales volume in the retail room. And then separate from that would be an endorsement to provide free samples, and this could be done regardless of whether the manufacturer has another retail license. They would be able to offer it at their production site.
Anna, it's my understanding from previous discussions that there's a grandfathering provision on the 80-20. And I'm just curious, will that show up in a later portion of the slide deck, or is that just not on this slide?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is not. It's specifically called out on the bullet, existing licensees converted, but it doesn't specify that, yes, they would also be grandfathered from this 80-20 rule.
Thank you.
So the next slide, slide 26. Demonstrates the volume limits for free samples that are proposed. Currently, each of these product types are allowed to offer small free samples, but the ounce amount of that is not defined in statute. So the proposed ounce limits are generally specific to the alcohol equivalent for each product type. Next slide. Slide 27 demonstrates the proposed sales limits for on-site consumption, the first row, and off-site consumption, meaning we purchase it and then carry it off-site and consume it at home or elsewhere. And again, these are by product type as well as by the license that produces them, the license type. And most of these limits are the same as what's already defined in statute, with the exception of the 5.167 gallons for beer or cider is currently 5 gallons, so it's a slight increase. And there are no current on-site consumption limits defined for wine, so that's proposed. And I believe that wine, currently you're allowed to sell 5 gallons off-site, so this would be, I believe, a reduction.
Thank you, Anna. I had asked at an earlier meeting if the committee could have information about how these amounts compare to other states. And then I'm also actually interested if the 80-20 provision exists in other states also.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We're still doing that research.
Okay, thank you.
I can say that my preliminary research was that some states do have a defined ounce limit for samples and others do not. So that concludes the manufacturer recommendations. The next slide, slide 28, is wholesaling. And again, wholesalers have multiple types of fees that they are required to pay in addition to the license fee. So one proposal is to slightly reduce the fees, the annual business transaction fees for small businesses, and retain the maximum fee for the largest businesses. And also also to streamline one of the reporting requirements that they have currently, rather than requiring them to submit paperwork for every single product line that they carry, that they would provide total number of product lines, and they would pay a fee accordingly. And the following slide, 29, shows the current and proposed fees for those annual transaction fees. So the next slide, 30, is getting into the retail license recommendations. So the first one is looking at multiple license premises allowed for a beverage dispensary license. As we discussed Tuesday, there's currently a duplicate license which allows one business to have more than one room that qualifies as a licensed premises as a bar. So in most cases, these are only allowed in the same contiguous building, but there are situations that have been issued in the past that allow beyond this. And so the proposal is to define those more clearly, to replace the duplicate license with a multiple fixed counter endorsement, which again is functionally the same, but is treated as an endorsement rather than a license, and creating two new endorsements. So on the following slide, 31, there's an illustration of each of these. So again, multiple fixed counters typically would be in the same connected license premises. A hotel or motel endorsement would allow them to be not physically adjacent, but still clearly tied to the same business, or having multiple rooms, such as a banquet room. And the large resort endorsement would allow duplicate or multiple licensed activities not within the same building, but on the same campus, and it defines specifically it must be a larger area with 10 or more acres with outdoor recreation and lodging. The next slide shows recommendations for package stores. One is to allow package stores to be able to order alcohol or accept online orders from Alaska customers and still be required to meet the same requirements for age verification, in-person delivery, et cetera. Next slide. Slide 33 simply illustrates the current process for ordering alcohol in a local option area, including reporting into the written order database that was discussed when we discussed Chapter 6 of Title 4. Next slide. The package store on-site product sampling endorsement. This is an endorsement that would allow package stores to offer free samples of their products. They would be limited by per customer per day volume. They can only do this during limited hours, and they have to limit their public advertising of sampling activities. And on the next slide, it shows these are the same volume limits proposed as those for manufacturers, but because a package store can sell all three product types simultaneously, they would be allowed to sell any combination of these as long as it doesn't exceed the total amount of any product type. And there are some example scenarios on the slide. The next slide is 36, recommendations for recreational site licenses. And this one is actually not a change to the statute or the definition of the statute for this license. It's simply renaming it to be more accurate to the types of events that it's used at, and also has a sunset provision of 8 years or 4 renewal periods that licenses that do not meet this current statutory definition that have been issued would have that period of time to either change their business or seek a new license type before their license would not be renewed. And this was related to findings in the 2014 and 2017 audits of the ABC board, which found that several of these licenses had been issued outside statutory authority. Next slide. Concerns permits. Again, there aren't major changes proposed to most of the permits that are currently defined either in statute or regulation, but it does give a standard application process for permits, a fee of at least $50 per event day, and relocating the permits currently in regulation to statute. So the next slide, 38, shows the current permits and where they are located permanently, whether in regulation or statute. And on the next slide, 39, this is a new permit proposed called a tasting event permit. This would allow a package store or a manufacturer to host a special tasting event on its premises, working with a BDL, which is a beverage dispensary license, or a BDL tourism, which again is a license that serves primarily tourists. And the licensee can hold it at the package store or the manufacturer's premises and offer products in their inventory for the purposes of showcasing the products that they make or sell. And again, there are some stipulations. They have to serve food. They can only do it for up to 4 hours for the event, and each partnering license, meaning the package store or manufacturer, can only host 6 events per year in that location. And there's no limit on the number of tasting events that a BDL can partner with, however. The next slide is the first of several slides related to public convenience. Again, the proposal is that the public convenience statute is repealed. It is the process for obtaining a restaurant or eating place license outside of the population limits. And if you go to slide 41, it illustrates the current process in Title IV. So again, public convenience, you gather signatures from neighboring residents that say they have no objection to the license. You submit an application to the board, and then the board reviews the application. There is no current statutory definition of public convenience, so that has been, a point of confusion or uncertainty at times, and it has resulted in more restaurant licenses issued in some communities that otherwise would not have that many. So there's a few proposed replacements for this statute if it's repealed. The first is slide 42, convert existing licenses to regular restaurants. And the main benefit of this is public convenience licenses are currently not a license type that is transferable by location or owner. So converting these licenses to regular restaurants would give them that privilege. And also if somebody is in the process of applying for one, they would also be able to be converted to a regular restaurant application. So that's in the transition section. The next slide, 43. Again, this was discussed in the transition section, the proposed seasonal restaurant tourism license. It would be available in smaller communities only. It would not be subject to population limits, but it would have a formula that determines the number available based on the number of visitors, and it can be operated up to 6 months out of the year. And the next slide, 44. Another replacement would be rather than allowing for individual applications to be considered outside the population limits. This would give cities, first-class cities, and unified municipalities the ability to petition the ABC board for an additional number of restaurant licenses in their community. And so they need to demonstrate that they have the enforcement capability to manage any potential impacts from those licenses, and that they have sufficient non-resident population, whether it's tourists, visitors, out-of-state, out-of-town visitors coming to their community, that they would support a market for that type of license. They can submit this petition. The ABC board would consider whether or not to issue those new licenses. And then if they do get those licenses issued, this is a question on Tuesday, then somebody in that community would be able to apply for that license the way they would normally. And then on the next slide, 45, another kind of change to a mechanism that's already in the law would be to allow for either a bar license or a package store license to be relocated from a city to a borough. So as I said, currently bar licenses, this is allowed in boroughs with at least 60,000 population. SB 76 would allow it in boroughs with 50,000 population that already have exceeded the number of operating licenses in that region. So slide 46 illustrates this concept. It shows that if you have licenses in a borough, they could be relocated, meaning not creating a new one, but relocating an existing one from one community to another into that city in that borough. And on slide 47, it illustrates both how many of these licenses would be available. Again, the goal is not to take away licenses that are already issued in communities or available in communities based on their own population. And so each of the boroughs that would qualify under this section have more than their normally allowed number of licenses already. And so those that would be qualify for relocation into a city are those that exceed the current population limit. And so that's illustrated on the slide as well. And you can see the numbers for each community. And then slide 48, this is again related to the license fees, which were previously discussed, that for municipal governments that have licenses in their area, they currently receive half of the license fee that is paid for licenses in that area. And that's done on an annual basis. And it's currently known as a refund. SB 76 proposes renaming it to allocation to more accurately reflect since it's not a refund, and also strengthens the requirement that municipalities report how those funds are being used. So on slide 49, it illustrates this concept. And again, the reporting is actually currently required in statute, but the wording is such that that it's not consistently being followed, and that it gives the department the ability to withhold those funds if they are not getting those reports. And then the next slide, slide 50, just demonstrates some of the transition provisions for existing licensees. Again, the goal is not to disrupt what people or what businesses are doing now, but to smoothly transition from the current system to this new licensing system, which mostly involves renumbering licenses or renaming things. So on slide 51, it shows an example of current licensees being converted. Again, most aren't really substantially changing. These manufacturer licenses would become a manufacturing production license as well as a retail license. And again, they would be able to continue the privileges they already have. Slide 52 illustrates what would happen with a license that has either duplicate licenses or would have multiple endorsements associated with what they do. So for example, a package store that's already doing things allowed in there in statute would then be converted to having a package store with the relevant endorsement. And then the last slide, 53, shows, again, this process takes time, the application process takes time, and so anybody who is in the process of getting an application but has not been granted one yet, their application, if the license type changes, then the application would also be changed. And that concludes the presentation.
Thank you. Are there any questions of committee members? Senator Meyer? No questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Rachel, and thank you, Anna. We do have some individuals in the room and also online as we continue public testimony on Title IV rewrite. So first, I'd like to start here in Juneau. And Leanne Thomas. And that will be, I see Dale Fox, you're only here for questions. Okay.
Do you want to come up then?
Yes, please. I'm sorry.
I wasn't quite sure if you were going to name other people.
I almost was, but it's hard to maneuver through a lot of these names, and so I'm just going to invite you. And, please state your name for the record and provide your testimony on Senate Bill 76.
I'm Leanne Thomas, and I think the alcohol industry has worked a long time, about 6 years, on this bill. I have been in a lot of meetings that worked with other industry members to make sure that this bill worked together to make an improvement on our current Title IV. I represent many Juneau alcohol retailers that are in the room, just in Juneau and in this room. There's six or seven of us here listening and caring about the law that's happening right now. We are excited about SB 76. We haven't had a rewrite for Title IV laws in 30 years. That means 30 years of tweaking it, adding things, and so it's time. It's ready to have a rewrite. I believe this rewrite is going to make things better. I think the alcohol industry wants and needs Title IV laws to be correct, have them make sense, have them work for the industry. I am very confident when this bill could make my small, long-term Alaskan business stay and also prosper and hopefully add to the economy of Alaska like many other alcohol industry businesses here. So I hope you move this bill along because I think it will improve the alcohol industry. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, Daniel Chayette with the Bristol Bay Native Corporation.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. This is Daniel Chayette, and I'm with Bristol Bay Native Corporation. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to members of the committee about Senate Bill 76. And I'd like to testify in support of Senate Bill 76, specifically one particular provision which is important to the fly-out fishing lodge industry, and that's Section 57, which would add outdoor recreation lodges to the list of license types that a local option community can exempt from the local option, in other words, to be permitted. Specifically in the community of Aleknagik, in 2011, the city voted to be a local option community, but in that vote, they exempted outdoor recreation lodges, and there are a few of them within the city limits, and those lodges have received licenses and been able to operate and contribute to the local economy. The bed tax and sales tax that those lodges pay form a significant amount of the city budget and revenue each year. This past year, as those lodges were applying for renewals, they learned that the ABC board was contemplating not renewing their licenses because they did not believe that the current statutes allowed for an exception for outdoor recreation lodges. So Section 57 of Senate Bill 76 would add outdoor recreation lodges to the list of license types that could be exempted, and this would fix the problem that's in Aleknagik. This is important not only for the lodges, but the city itself. As I said, in 2011, the city voted on a local option. It voted to become dry, but to allow for the outdoor recreation lodges to continue to operate, and they are important parts of those communities, both financially and just part of the cultural fabric there. And without this change, those lodges will no longer be able to be licensed, and that obviously presents a significant business obstacle for them and a potential loss of revenue for the community of Aleknagik. So the simplest and best fix would be to amend the statutes to provide for outdoor recreation lodges as a license type that could be part of a local option, and Senate Bill 76 does that. So that's why we support it and urge the committee to move this legislation on. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we'll go to Adalia Frazier calling in from Homer.
Yes, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today, but I just wanted to say that I am in full support of the Senate Bill 76. I think it's a fair and a much-needed bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adalia. Appreciate your patience. Next, Matt Jones calling in from Anchorage. Matt?
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you, so go ahead and provide your testimony, please.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, my name is Matt Jones, and I represent the Moose's Tooth, the Bear Tooth, and Broken Tooth Brewing in Anchorage. And currently, as Title IV stands, it's a mess. We have multiple licenses, and every time we have a renewal or I need to talk to the folks at AMCO, everyone's confused, and no one can really come up with a quick answer on what we need to do. They're confused. We're confused. Our licenses go back 20 years. And because the laws have changed over the years, everyone has to refresh their memory on where we stand now. It's not an open, and you can't just open the book and just go right to the section. You have to read about five different sections to be able to figure out what license can be renewed, which ones can't, what we can do, what we can't do. So rewriting Title IV will greatly help them. It'll greatly help us. I think it'll help anyone with a license. My other part of my testimony is that we are a brew pub, and as a brew pub, we have a production limit. And so for the last about 10 years, we haven't been able to grow the brewing part of our business. And if Title IV is rewritten, we will no longer be a brew pub. We'll just be a brewing manufacturer. And with that, we'll be able to greatly increase the brewing side of our business and grow the number of jobs that we have down at the brewery. So Title IV would really help that. So that's my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. I noticed here, if you're a brewery, you can only stay open until 8, but in your case, I know you guys are open much later than that. So do you have a full dispensary license as well?
So at the Moses Tooth, it's a long story, but we were originally a brewery and we owned a restaurant license. In 1996, that combination became illegal, so we had to change to a brew pub. So at the Moose's Tooth, we have a full beverage dispensary license so that we could keep owning and we had to convert to a brew pub instead of a brewery. So we're a brew pub beverage dispensary license combo. And even though we have a beverage dispensary license at the Moose's Tooth, we've never sold any hard alcohol, but we've had to have that license because of the brew pub part of the equation. You can't have a brew pub without a full liquor license and do the things we do. So yeah, we have a full license at all our locations, actually.
Okay, and then I'm assuming then you can stay open till 2 or 3 in the morning, whatever the hours are for full dispensary.
We can. With the BDL, we have the full sort of bundle of rights that come with the BDL.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next, Hillary Schaefer. Calling in from Fairbanks.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Hillary Schaefer from Fairbanks, Alaska. And I have, my partner and I own a full beverage dispensary license. And we have a little bit of concern that the bill is going to help manufacturer license holders and not benefit beverage dispensary license holders. We have experienced a reduction in our gross sales since the tasting rooms have opened. We support local businesses. We actually sell some of the product from local distilleries as well as breweries. But what we've experienced is our crowd that typically comes in after work between 5 and 8 p.m. after work is not showing up, or if they do show up, they have been overserved at these tasting rooms, which puts us at a heightened liability.
Thank you, Hillary.
So we would like to see. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, if you wanted to wrap up your testimony, please.
Yeah, thank you. So I guess if there could be consideration for limiting the amount that's distributed in the tasting room and or the business hours and or the retail. So that's it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions for Hillary? Okay, seeing none. Next, Jeff Jesse calling in from Anchorage.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the former CEO of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, but today I'm testifying as an individual and as the co-chair of the Title IV Review Steering Committee. I also chair the licensing committee of that group. One of the issues that we dealt with for many years was going to Alcohol Beverage Control Board meetings and having ongoing complicated arguments both with the board and with the industry over what the statutes actually provided for and what decisions the board was going to make in interpreting them. And what became obvious over time, as other people have testified to, is that Title IV was well overdue for a pretty comprehensive overhaul. It was certainly a process of building relationships and trust between the public health sector and the industry, but we were able to get there by finding common ground. I'd like to highlight just a couple of those. For example, when we took a look at penalties for violations of some of the requirements, what we found is that many of the violations resulted in misdemeanor charges. This had some negative effects. First of all, it put people at considerable legal risk when really what we wanted to do was educate people into complying with the law, not necessarily have them convicted of misdemeanor crime. What we were able to do with industry was to come to an agreement to reduce that to a fine system, which will hold people accountable, but again, focus on education and remediation rather than penalties. We were able to work with the industry on recognized advances in the industry and working with them on rules around tasting rooms and internet sales where the accommodations that we made didn't have negative effects on public health. And finally, able to work with them on, again, this emphasis on education and agreeing that if the fee structure was adapted to provide more resources to the board, that those would be used to promote education. Those are just three areas of many in this bill that we were able to achieve an unprecedented partnership between industry and public health. And I urge you to support the bill and move it as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you calling in. Next, Angela Cox with the Rasmussen Foundation.
Hello?
Yes, Angela, we can hear you. Go ahead and provide your testimony.
All right, great. Thank you. Good afternoon, Senate Committee Chair Costello and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Angela Cox, and I serve as Vice President of External Affairs at Rasmussen Foundation. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 76. For over 60 years, Rasmussen Foundation has invested in programs and facilities that offer support and sanctuary to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, child abuse and neglect, and the homeless. The overconsumption of alcohol, as you know, has a high correlation with many of the state's most difficult issues. Our foundation is a founding member and funding partner of the Recover Alaska Initiative. We were an original convener at our board's direction because of the large amount of dollars being invested in addressing the impacts of alcohol overuse. Through Recover Alaska, we have turned our attention upstream to identify and address root causes of alcohol as a challenging social problem. Policy change is the core tenet of Recover Alaska's work, and revision to Title IV contributes to the larger effort to reduce the harms of alcohol in Alaska. Title IV is recognized, as you've heard, in many ways as outdated or confusing, having not been comprehensively updated since 1980. And over time, incremental updates have reduced its effectiveness. Senate Bill 76 would be a great step forward, and here are some reasons why. We should regulate internet sales of alcohol and bring Alaska up to date with other states. Right now, we cannot protect youth or limit anyone from ordering alcohol online or stop online alcohol orders to local option communities. SB 76 would also increase licensing fees, giving the ABC board and AMCO more resources to provide education on Title IV and better enforce the statute. Requiring that all kegs purchased from an Alaska license be registered will aid in reducing minors' access to alcohol, which is one of the primary goals for Recover Alaska. And Rasmussen Foundation, with our partners, we've dedicated hundreds of hours on this effort and provided funds for the process. And rarely do so many stakeholders come together to tackle an issue like this, an issue that so greatly affects the people of the state. I want to end by thanking you and the Alaska State Legislature for your time and consideration, and I'm happy to remain online for any questions.
Thank you, Angela. I appreciate you calling in to testify. Next, Richard Rosen with Alyeska Resort. Richard, if you could provide your testimony, please.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Richard Rosen. I'm currently general counsel for Alyeska Resort. Previously, I was in private practice and represented not only Alyeska, but a number of other people in industry, including package store retailers. I participated in the rewrite effort with other members from the get-go, particularly serving on the licensing subcommittee, and I support SB 76. There was a lot of compromise between public health and industry. There was compromise within the industry. Not everyone is happy with everything, but I think overall it's a good compromise. The current statute, as some others have mentioned, is outdated and there are ambiguities. The proposed bill fixes some of those things and brings them to modern age. For instance, Alyeska Resort has duplicate licenses over the space of its resort, and they're in different buildings and are not connected. Some people question whether that was permitted under the current statute. We believe it is. But to bring clarity to it, the new statute calls for multiple fixed counter endorsements, which generally must be in the same building unless you apply for a hotel or motel endorsement or a large resort endorsement, and there are certain restrictions that go along with each of those. That brings clarity to an area that both public health and the industry was happy with. Another area that's an improvement, in many other states, package stores are allowed to offer free samples to their customers in small amounts so they can see what they would like to buy. For instance, I'm in Idaho at a Trader Joe's, and they offer such things, and it's very common in many other states. And the statute would allow that. It will also allow a package store to hold a tasting event, but would have to partner with a holder of a beverage dispensary license to hold that tasting event. And that was a compromise within the industry to fashion it in that fashion. And there also introduces the concept of unfair trade practices regulation. These currently exist at the federal level, but the state regulators said, as a practical matter, the federal government did not enforce it, so that the AMCO office relatively powerless to do anything about it. The unfair trade practices portion of this bill is generally patterned after the federal statute and encourages regulations to be adopted consistent with the federal statutes and regulations. The progress made on ordering wine from out of state is, in my mind, not a perfect solution, but a step in the right direction. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but otherwise, again, I support the bill, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Richard. Next, Christopher Dick calling in from Kodiak. Or excuse me, you're at the Kodiak LAO.
Yes, thank you. Hi, my name is Dylan Dick. I run the restaurant Henry's here in Kodiak. I'm a char member. I just wanted to say that I support SB 76. I feel it's a once-in-a-generation opportunity to fix longstanding problems. It clarifies a lot. Those who helped craft this bill did their best not to hurt current licensees, and it seems like a good improvement for the industry overall. Among other things, SB 76 provides clarity for everyone in the industry regarding the penalties, such as some violations being a misdemeanor or a criminal offense for something as simple as a torn or missing sign. And if a server or staff member changes prices twice in a week, it could be considered a crime instead of just a minor error or a fine. For the first time, it will not be illegal for the bar owner or managers to be in their bar updating books and doing inventory after the closing time. Some simple issues like that do a lot to clarify and make it better for businesses. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 76? Is there anyone here in the room? Oh, you have a question. Senator Gardner?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Dick, you mentioned something about changing prices could be an inadvertent violation of something. Can you expound on that? Because that's kind of a new topic to me.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, I just, to my understanding here, in Alaska, if you change your prices twice within a week, it is a violation, going back to running specials and everything like that. If me or one of my supervisors or managers changes the price on a drink and perhaps another person goes back and changes it to a different price, I believe that would be a violation. If my understanding is correct, Dale could probably provide some clarification as well from Char there in the room.
Thank you, Dale. Thank now, you. Three individuals have asked for you to come forward, so I'm going to invite you forward. You're not getting out of it. Can you state your name and organization for the record?
Dale Fox, and I work with Alaska Char. Current pricing and marketing statute, which most of us think of as the happy hour law from the 80s, said that you can't change the price within a calendar week. Now, one of the interesting things about the current law is nobody knows what a calendar week is. You have to look it up. And as I'm sitting here right now, I can't tell you. It's either starts Sunday and ends Saturday night, or it starts Monday, and I'm not sure. But that's the point. And that would be a Class A misdemeanor. Could put you in jail for a year and a $10,000 fine. Well, this SB 76 fixes that. It says your pricing is any 7 days. So if you have a price that you change on Wednesday, it's okay if you change it every Wednesday. So any 7 days, and a minor issue if you made a mistake and, oh, you changed it on the sixth day, wouldn't put you in jail for a year with the new law.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So I have to ask, do you know what the rationale for that was?
Yeah, the rationale was back in the 1980s, they were trying to prevent happy hours. And happy hours is the changing, lowering of the prices to gain customers. And so they didn't want happy hours and didn't want variable pricing. And so they didn't want the price from 5 to 6 on Mondays to be cheaper.
Thank you.
So that was the rationale back in the 80s.
Other questions for Dale? Senator Meyer. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's okay. Thanks, Manager. Thank you, Dale. So if the hangar, for example, wants to have drinks half price on Fridays, they could do that?
No, they would not be able to do that. You still have to do the 7 days. So if they do a special, they have to do it for 7 days.
Oh, I see. Seven consecutive days?
Seven consecutive days under SB 76. Under current law, it's a calendar week, whatever the heck that means.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here in Juneau that wishes to testify on Central 76? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, please feel free to come forward and just state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Frederick Kasnick. I'm the owner of the Island Pub in Douglas. I did have a question, and I tried to read through this quickly, but I was looking to see if there was any provision that dictates to the manufacturers, whatever kind of manufacturer they are, beer, wine, distillery, as to is there a ratio or a percentage that they would be allowed to sell within these tasting rooms versus on a wholesale or retail basis to suppliers or retailers like package stores or whatever?
So I think that question is best answered by Anna Browley, who's listening online in Anchorage. Anna?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. If I heard correctly, the question is about provisions requiring manufacturers to only sell a portion of their production at retail. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes, that section is defined for, again, manufacturers that are not operating currently, as the current ones would be grandfathered in, but it's in Section 9, and it would be 0409-310 for breweries and 320 for wineries, 330 for distilleries.
Can you tell me what that percentage is?
Yes, it would be that for those manufacturers that don't qualify for the grandfather, after 8 years, they would be required to sell or allowed to sell up to 20% of their total production sales in Alaska through that retail license. So this would not apply to a restaurant or a package store or another type of retail license.
Would that mean that that percentage retail would be within their premises?
Through the chair, yes.
Okay. And so the ones that are operating now are grandfathered in for 8 years?
Through the chair, those licenses that are currently operating would be permanently grandfathered, and so this would apply to licenses that are issued after the effective date, which would be January 1st, 2020.
So in the case of a distillery now that's operating, can you tell me what percentage they're allowed to retail, or is it unlimited?
Thank you, through the chair. Yes, my understanding is there's no limit on total sales. The only limits are the per person per day sales.
Okay. My next comment, I guess, is obviously I want a bar. And I'm reading in here that the proposed limits for, an example, a distillery, I guess under the new proposed, there's a grandfathering for the distilleries that are running now, but their proposed limit is 3 drinks or 3 ounces per visit, I guess. Generally, in my business, after 3 drinks, we pretty much feel that they've had maybe enough, unless they're not driving. However, what I'm getting at, I guess, is for the distilleries, for example, they're basically a bar. They're selling 3 drinks a night, which is what most people drink, unless they're whatever. But I don't feel that that's right for when it comes to comparing them to bars and such like that. We pay $200,000 for our license. Distilleries pay $1,000 or whatever, and they're operating as a bar under this proposal. You had the previous page had a proposal for free drinks, and to me, that ratio of free drinks should be the retail. If you go to a tasting room down south in a winery or whatever, they might pay you charge you $5 for 5 glasses of very small, like a quarter ounce or something. But these are basically able to sell drinks, and under the grandfathered ones, they're able to sell unlimited drinks.
Thank you, Fred. Appreciate your being here and providing questions and comments. One of the questions that we've asked of the bill sponsors to provide a comparison of these amounts via state so the committee members can be more aware of where we fall. So that's something that we'll be looking at. Senator Machicki?
Just to clarify for the person testifying, I didn't get your name, I'm sorry.
Frederick Kasnick, I'm sorry.
Is that this bill does not change those limits. Those limits exist today. Whether the bill changes or passes or not, those limits are the same, and that this bill doesn't change those limits. So
the limits you're referring to, are those in here?
That's correct. I think it's important for the public to understand that. That's been one of the things that has confused folks.
I heard the grandfathering thing that maybe I was misinterpreting that.
Madam Chair?
Senator Machicki?
So the grandfathering is about the 80-20 rule, which is, as I stated in the first meeting, and remains to be somewhat of a problem between the brewers particularly and other groups, is the 80-20 rule. That's the grandfathering that they're talking about. The 3-drink limit essentially in those establishments is not affected by the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fred, for being here. Mm-hmm. So we've heard public testimony on version Tango of Senate Bill 76. It's my intention to continue to hold this bill. We have, it's my understanding that the sponsor is working on some amendments. And with that, I want to mention that our next meeting is Tuesday at 1:30. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.